Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show from the Labatt Blue Studio. Labatt Blue and Labatt Blue Light. Bleed blue and white, drink blue and light. And don't forget to try the new Labatt Blue Light Seltzer Variety Pack, available at retailers throughout Pennsylvania.
And welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number three. I'm Jim Galante, along with Dustin Hawkinsmith. We're talking Penn State-Ohio State game. We spent a lot of time, Dustin, talking about the offense. Let's go to the other side. Let's talk defense. And we've been talking about how transformative this game was compared to last week against Illinois with the healthy Sean Clifford. But also, you go to the other side of the ball, and I know they only gave up 10 points against Illinois. I know that. But Illinois just dominated them on the ground. This game, as you mentioned earlier, Trevon Henderson, he got that one big run. But other than that, they just completely bottled them up. What happened, Dustin? Why the change?
I think it was a more inspired effort from the guys up front. I can imagine in practice, you know, along the D-line, John Scott Jr. was really putting out a challenge to, you know, to do better and be better, not let that experience define them. I thought you saw a little bit more juice from those guys up front. I thought, you know, the linebackers in this game, they've been outstanding all year, but they were just flying to the ball. They were reading things well. They were making plays in the open field. They were filling gaps. And I think the same is true of the safeties, too. Jair Brown and Jaquan Brisker were doing outstanding work. You know, Jair Brown and how willing he was to be physical in this one was just another layer of his play this year that I think probably is still underappreciated to a certain extent. You know, I thought he was really, really good in this game, finished with seven tackles, did the job. He was a big part of that too. And then I look back at, you know, obviously what's different between Illinois and Ohio State is that, you know, and maybe this the blame lays at the feet of the coaching staff, is that when Illinois lined up in that big formation, it changed the math, it changed the way that they were trying to fill gaps. There was no adjustment really whatsoever for that. Almost saying, it was almost a challenge, like, okay, if you want to go 3-4 yards at a time, we're going to challenge you to march the whole way down the field and finish drives. And Illinois did the first part, but they never did the second part. But I think a more inspired effort, I think a more straightforward look from Ohio State, not needing to resort to those tactics, probably played some part of it. But I thought just those guys rose to the challenge. And then, as I mentioned earlier, when it came time and Ohio State was knocking on the door, this was a big, unique challenge with this Ohio State offense because of the weapons that they had and because C.J. Stroud, when he's afforded an opportunity and time to throw, he is a very talented, accurate quarterback. And that kind of scared me a bit when it came to the red zone, is that, okay, he can do some things when there are open receivers, when there are opportunities. He can do some things that no other quarterback on the schedule has been able to do. And you know what happened in this situation is, yeah, C.J. Stroud, a pretty brutal underthrow on that fourth down play in the red zone. That's a tough one that he would surely love to have back. But for the most part, they made it hard on him too. And whether that was pressure, whether that was coverage, you know, I think they mixed and matched and they were able to continue doing the job in the red zone. Huge story coming out of this one because Ohio State is unlike any other offense that Penn State has faced. Number one in the country in points and yardage, and they continued to do the same thing against them while rising to the occasion and holding off Trevon Henderson. If you would have said through three quarters he would have had whatever he had on the ground, 40 yards or something like that, you would take that every single day of the week. Really inspired effort, I thought, coming out there, making the trip on the road, responding to the challenge and rising to it, and playing extremely well in this game. Holding Ohio State to 33 points is a big-time job by Brent Pry and the staff. And he was even better early in this game, which I thought was huge in the flow of things to help keep Penn State close the whole way through.
And a couple points to that, and again, I understand this is not the way the game is played, but Trevon Henderson, the one long run of 68 yards, that was almost half his yards, his 150 yards. So you take that one away, he was averaging, what, 2 or 3 yards a carry. That's a tremendous effort by the defense. Going to the red zone defense, though, and you mentioned earlier in the show how Ryan Day said, well, gee, if we had gotten 7 points instead of 3 when we kept going into the red zone, that is treating that red zone defense as if it's a random kind of thing, almost like turnovers can be called random events until you start doing that every single game. And it's now been the case, it seems, every game Penn State stopping the other team on in the red zone. It's no longer one of these unpredictable random statistics. It's the way they play the game because it's happened too many times. One last note I would like to bring up, and I wasn't sure when to bring it up in the show, but I'm going to choose right now. I mentioned turnovers and alluded to Iowa. A few weeks ago after the Penn State-Iowa game, I said, you know, hopefully Penn State will succeed, meet Iowa in the conference championship game, and because they had such an easy schedule, do not play a ranked team the rest of the way. And you corrected me and said, no, Jim, they're going to have two losses before the regular season's over. Dustin, it took them two games to lose those two. So kudos to you for that.
They got there even faster than I thought they would. I mean, Purdue has historically just kind of had their number under Jeff Brohm, and I really thought going to Wisconsin was going to be problematic. I was not very impressed with that Iowa team, having watched them in person. I didn't think their offense was capable of winning games for them. I thought the turnover situation was going to catch up to them, which, to your point, you know, it can be fluky. You know, I think Iowa, to some extent, those takeaways are part of the fabric and what they're aiming to do, and something that they had a special group of players who were able to execute that. But on a week in and week out basis, you cannot count on creating a billion short fields. You can't count on creating pick sixes all season long. Like, there is going to be some regression in that department. Penn State's red zone defense, it applies whether they're at home, whether they're on the road, whether they're playing a run-heavy team, whether they're playing a pass-heavy team. When the field gets short and traffic ramps up and there are bodies everywhere, Penn State can put pressure on the quarterback. They are dynamic, they're long, they're athletic, they're fast. And you know what ends up happening in these situations? Sometimes it truly is a battle of wills, and Penn State is extra hungry in the red zone. And it doesn't matter who they're playing, that travels. And we have more concrete proof of that now than ever before. But yeah, I will take credit for Iowa losing. I did think that they were destined to regress to the mean some, and I think they went the whole other direction. I think they'll come back and come back and be a little bit more positive and win some more games. But this is not, I mean, this was never a top two team. Their resume just kind of made it look that way for a little while. I think, you know, Michigan State, they came to prove it some more. Michigan, you know, both of those teams, that was the first good team they played. Do we really know that Michigan State is great? Do we really know that Michigan is great in those situations? It's true of everybody. You know, I think you can't crash back down to earth without playing a good team in most cases.
Iowa did come back down to earth. Let's get back to the Penn State defense and talk a little bit about the defensive backs. You mentioned Jair Brown. He took a bad angle once or twice. Other than that, there were several plays where you saw him or Jaquan Brisker. But the other guy that seems to now, it's weekly, make a big play is Curtis Jacobs. Might he end up eventually being the best of this linebacker group?
Boy, that is a really fair question to ask, because if you're looking at the trajectory, where he's at in his career versus where Brandon Smith was at the same time in his career, you're looking at him athletically and speed-wise and just having a flair for playmaking. You know, he's a little different caliber of athlete than Ellis Brooks is. Curtis Jacobs is not Micah Parsons, but boy, I mean, I do think, you know, my prediction would be that he is going to overtake both Brandon Smith and Ellis Brooks as being a better linebacker. Maybe not in the same time that they're lined up, but it's really, you know, we're going to look back on this time and watching these three linebackers play together and be like, wow, I can't believe those three guys were on the same field at the same time and that Penn State team still went 8-4 or 7-5. You know, it's going to be that kind of thing. But, you know, looking ahead, I mean, Brandon Smith, probably is going to have a lot of temptation to leave for the NFL after this year because his raw physical tools. I think Mel Kiper Jr. had him as a top 30 prospect for the 2022 draft. I believe that's who it was. So there could be a scenario where Curtis Jacobs is the only one of these three guys who are back next year. And he's going to be a legitimate star. We've seen it building here for the last three or four weeks. He's finding a way to pop on film. And in this one, I think he had two tackles for loss, two big time plays in that department, had an interception last week, had a sack the week before. So you're seeing him show up more and more and more. Outstanding play from him. He's one of, you know, probably just a select few guys on Penn State's roster who athletically is really in the same caliber of Ohio State's best guys. And Jair Brown, really, really good player. That's what speed does, is, you know, yeah, he didn't take the best angle, but speed kind of dictates that. And when you're looking at on a play-by-play basis, the margin for error is just incredibly thin. And it has Penn State feeling like they need to do more, feeling like they need to take more chances, more risks. And Jair Brown took a bad angle, but that was just, you know, as much Ohio State as it was him taking a bad angle on that play. But to circle back around, yeah, Curtis Jacobs probably going to be the best of this group if I had to say it right now.
And expecting perfection from them on defense, especially against an offense like Ohio State, you don't stop a running back like Henderson for the full game. You know, you stop him as much as possible. And just like Olave getting open, you know, they held him down just about as much as you could have possibly expected. And by the way, that play where he broke out for the touchdown, there seemed to be a little bit of confusion with the defensive backs. But I still say, as I was watching that ball, I'm saying, oh, good, it's overthrown. And it was, he seemed to make up time, didn't he?
Yeah, and I think C.J. Stroud knew he was going to make up time, and I think he put it in a spot where he felt confident Olave could run under it. And I don't know that in that situation, he didn't have a catch at that point, by the way. I don't know that you ever really want, and I'm sure it happens, you know, often during the game, but to have one safety hand off Olave to another safety, that's not really where you want to be ideally. So, you know, it was just a well-designed route at a good time. There was just a little bit of hesitation in terms of who was going to do what in that situation. Keaton Ellis handed him off to Brisker. Brisker was kind of taking steps in the opposite direction and tried to make up ground. Just wasn't going to happen. But C.J. Stroud was one of maybe one or two quarterbacks on Penn State's schedule so far who could have actually made that pass, even with that in mind. Still took a pretty good throw to make that play happen. But you could only restrict the big plays for so long against Ohio State. They made them happen late in this one.
And that is a very good offense, as you pointed out earlier. Okay, Dustin, when we come back in the fourth quarter, we're going to talk about some of those special plays that happen that change a game, including the officials. Stay tuned for that. Fans are back, and so is tailgating. That means GoPSURV.com is also back. Regular listeners of Keystone Sports know all about it. Drive your car to Happy Valley, and an RV is there waiting for you. Tailgate nonstop from Friday to Sunday. Don't hassle with parking, as a free shuttle will take you to and from the game. For more info, go to GoPSURV.com or call Mark at 1-800-519-8467.
Labatt Blue and Labatt Blue Light want to remind you that fall is the best season. Why? Because of football. Leaves. Fantasy football, flannel, beards, tailgating, oh yeah, and more football. Welcome to the best season ever. Grab some Labatt Blue and Labatt Blue Light. Because it's time to get undomesticated. Beer. Labatt USA, Buffalo, New York. Always enjoy responsibly.